Hi, I'm Dan Erickson, owner of Brand Shouter, an internet marketing agency located in the northwest corner of Washington State. In over 20 years of marketing, I've learned many lessons, some the hard way. Today, I want to share my knowledge with anyone that would like to listen. The purpose of this podcast is to help other entrepreneurs reach their prospective clients and ultimately their goals. This is the very first episode of the Brand Shouter podcast. In today's podcast, I focus on three fast steps to an outstanding brand.
You're listening to the Business Growth Podcast by Brand Shouter. With each episode, we provide tips, tricks, and conversation geared towards helping your business succeed. It's time to get creatively smart. Now, here's your host, Dan Erickson.
So a style guide is a crucial part of a well-functioning business with a growth strategy. So if your business doesn't have a style guide, you're making a pretty critical mistake. A few years before starting Brand Shouter, and just to be clear, that's Brand, B-R-A-N-D, Shouter, S-H-O-U-T-E-R. It's not Clam Chowder or Brand Chowder or all these other things I get to hear. Yeah, it's a good talking point. But anyhow, I ran a coffee company before starting Brand Shouter with aspirations of growing to be quite large. We specialized in shipping coffee to the homes of our customers, and our coffee was quite good. This coffee company was my first foray into the world of owning and managing a small business with a growth strategy. We built each marketing piece to demand. Somebody asked for a newspaper ad. Sure, we'll whip one up. We need to get packaging for the coffee. All right, let's do a whole different look. You know, we'll make it look more organic, more natural, because the coffee was organic. Although the print ad, you know, we used vivid colors and it didn't have the same type of look. The thing that I'm coming to here is most businesses have no idea about consistency and branding, and they keep a uniform, or they don't keep a uniform look. They need to figure that out. 4 years into my coffee business, we pretty much had a mess from a marketing standpoint. There was, I think, three or four variations of our logo out in the wild, and our packaging was craft, you know, kind of a tan color, while our signage, we overlaid a burlap texture on the craft, which made it look pretty different. Our colors, we had various shades of green, black, brown, and then with different marketing pieces, we thought it would always be fun to do something just off the wall. So we'd have something that goes out that's red and something that went out that was orange or like bright, eye-bleeding yellow, and then do other things just on white. Needless to say, if you looked at all of our marketing over those years and put it side by side, you would assume each piece was from a different company. If you didn't read it, just looking at it, because visually there was no cohesion. Chances are you are probably in a similar situation, unless you've got your act together already, in which case, kudos to you. Most small businesses have no idea about consistency and branding and keeping a uniform look. Furthermore, a lot of small businesses don't place value in the consistency. A style guide is a relatively simple thing to create and will quickly become a cornerstone of your business once you have it in place. This post that I'm now narrating for you is to help you build your own style guide, a basic one, so that you can get the cornerstone pieces of your business set up. So moving into style guide creation, let's cover what it is. You know, it seems pretty obvious to me, but the listener may not find it quite so obvious. So a style guide is typically kept as a document within an organization. And it's referenced for all marketing and branding purposes. So, for example, if you're going to do a banner, maybe you hire an external graphic designer, maybe you have an in-house graphic designer. Either way, they open up the style guide to get your color codes, to see the fonts that are appropriate to use, and to see the best way to use your logo. Other graphic elements can reside in there. And I mean, depending on how crazy you want to get, you can list a bunch of don'ts and a bunch of do's. And I mean, you could really go all out. I generally keep my style guides a little bit more basic. Being a smaller staffed company, I know the look that I want. And since I'm in control of that, I get to keep that. But as your company grows, you definitely want your style guide to to work as a tool rather than relying on your knowledge and all of that as well. So, okay, now that we have a baseline spelled out, here are the three, what I call the three fast steps to an outstanding brand, but it's basically the three key elements that you have to have documented for your company to ensure that your brand is consistent. So element number one is your colors. Colors are big. They're super important. And that's why I touched on it in my previous position. That's why I touched on that quite a bit. Your business colors are going to be the single most referenced piece of information in your style guide. And everything else will be referenced fairly often. So that's to show you how big this is. Colors are so important and crucial to your business, as visually they are the first thing people associate with your brand. If you want to delve more into the psychology of color, they also invoke different feelings that can be beneficial or harmful to your brand. Have you ever noticed a lot of national restaurant and fast food chains use colors red and yellow? Just a few off the top of your head. Jack in the Box, McDonald's. Five Guys is one of my favorite ones. You think of a lot of them, and they don't all, but a good chunk of them do, because red and yellow are psychologically made to or psychologically proven to make the viewer feel just a touch more hungry. Did you know that the color blue evokes trust, and the color black tends to signify that you're no nonsense? So if your brand is stark black against stark white, it gives this very harsh, no nonsense approach. And in some businesses, that's a good approach. And in others, that kills the vibe. A lot of businesses, especially in marketing, use blues. I don't, but a lot do, because blues invoke trust, and that's a good thing. Of course, what's most important is that your brand colors reflect who you are. So you can always go for the psychological, approach, but you want to know your target demographic as well. My business, Brand Shutter, we recently rebranded to our target, which was 25 to 50 year olds. And we're based in the Pacific Northwest. So we chose to go with a clean look that's kind of Northwesty. So we have a dark brown as our primary. Bark on trees and, wet dirt, because it tends to be pretty wet up here. Our second primary, so that's our primary dark color. Our primary light color is just plain white. I tend to be minimalist, which we'll talk more about later, but that's where that comes from. And our primary accent color I really like it. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just a really cool green color. The hue is just perfect for my mind. And that's to kind of reflect the beauty of the nature around us. A lot of green trees, a lot of green grass. We recommend that you choose anywhere from 3 to 5 colors for your style guide. Typically, I recommend 3. You want the first 3 to be your colors. So in my case, going back to reference what I just said, I have the dark brown, the white. Those are my 2 primary colors. Piece of paper is white, right? Website is predominantly white. Various elements would be brown, that dark brown. And then your third color being your accent color, which is used, looking at the website, hyperlinks are green, buttons are green. It kind of creates the final layer of your visual look. At Brand Shutter, we actually have 5 colors. I know I just said you should probably stick to 3, but there are use cases. At Brand Shutter, we actually have multiple facets of our business, and the 2 extra colors are used as accents in some of the other facets of the business. You won't see those on the Brand Shutter site generally, but you will see them through some of our other projects if you were to go and look around. We've also created slightly darker and slightly lighter, with the exception of white. You can't get lighter than white. Versions of our colors that are used for visual effects, like mouse overs when you hover a link and it changes color, or a button when you hover the button and it changes color. That way we can add some subtlety and some action without changing our branding. So once you've established your colors, you have the most important piece and the basic building blocks that will take you through the rest of this guide. So the second element that I wanted to kind of discuss is your logo. It's amazing how many people have young nephew or grandson, or, well, probably not grandson. You're probably not listening to this if you're having your grandson do it, but having, you know, a family member or somebody they know make a logo, and, you know, the logo's not awful, but it's also, you know, if you wanted to spend the money, you would probably do it nicer. And the problem is your logo is just as crucial to your brand as your colors, because it uses your colors, which is why I always rate the colors a little higher, but the logo is how people recognize you. It's important to have a crisp, clean version of your logo that can be used in your style guide. Of course, you don't have a logo for a style guide, but you also want to use it in all forms of print and internet marketing, and anything that's related to your business. You should keep various versions of your logo, but specifically you need vector formatted. And if you don't know what vector is, the short story is it's a type of an image that can be shrunk or stretched to just about, well, I think actually it's infinite, sizes without losing quality. The problem is, you know, when somebody asks for a logo and you send them a PNG or a JPEG or a bitmap even, God forbid, those you can't resize without losing quality. If you shrink them, the program has to best guess, and usually shrinking is okay, but enlarging, it gets fuzzy, it pixelates, and things just aren't right. So with a vector image, it uses a different type of information to stretch the image or shrink it and keep it correct. Nothing screams run away from this business more than a fuzzy or pixelated logo. And as a side note, if you've ever used a high DPI computer like a Retina display Mac or even, you know, the Retina eye devices like the iPad and the iPhone, or any Windows device that's flagged as high DPI, that means that it has a very large pixel density. What that also means is if you put an image on the screen that may look good on a low-res computer screen, but then somebody looks at it on the high DPI, it's going to look bad. So you always have to plan for somebody coming in with something better, especially when you're talking about the web, something higher tech, newer, and better than what you have. And you want to plan accordingly for that so that it looks crisp for them as well. The initial design of your logo will be one or two colors in whatever scheme the designer decides to use. I argue that all of these steps are a reason to hire a professional brand creation marketing company. name drop here. I've got one of those. In either case, it's important to ensure your logo matches your lightest brand color and your primary dark color. So in my case, I have to have a dark brown version of my logo and a white version that, depending on the backdrop behind it, will pop. If you have colors that are closer together, you can run into issues where a specific background color will not work with your logo, in which case you need to go back to the drawing board with your brand colors. Okay, so once you have a vector version in your hand of your logo, which your designer will create for you if they're worth anything, next you need to make sure you have these other versions. So you've got your vector. In our case, I use the Affinity Suite. The company's called Serif, S-E-R-I-F. You can look them up on the internet. They make Affinity Designer and Affinity Photo. I actually prefer them over the Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator programs, but they're also a lot cheaper. So it's an extra sell, and they're very similar. So if you already are using Adobe, it's an easy jump. A couple keys are a little different if you're using keyboard shortcuts and stuff, but they're real similar. And so I always keep a vector version of that. I also keep a .eps file, which an EPS stands for Encapsulated PostScript, which is another form of vector, and it's the most universally compatible vector file available. So if I do work with a printer or whatever, I can just send them the EPS file knowing that whatever program they use is going to be able to open it just the way it's supposed to look. It's compatible with Adobe's programs, Serif's programs, and, you know, GIMP and all the other programs out there. I also create a PNG file. So typically your logo has a transparent background. Most people's logos have transparent backgrounds if they're modern and crisp. If that's the case, you have to have PNG versions of the logos because a PNG supports the transparency. I also keep a JPEG version of the logo. The JPEG, even if it has a transparent background, I pick my alternate color. So if I have a dark brown version of my logo, I put the white behind it. And if I have the white version of my logo, I put the dark brown behind it. There's various use cases where a JPEG like that works really well and looks good. So I keep both of those at about 2,000 pixel width, and sometimes I make alternate versions at 500 pixel width and so forth. So that's a whole lot more information than you probably want to know about logos. So let's move on. And you can read more about this on the post, which will be linked in the description, which I think I'll mention later too. Once you've created your logo in the correct file formats, it's time to create an alternate version of your logo that will be used for other purposes like website icons, accents on marketing pieces, and other things. So for Brand Shouter, since our logo has a little shouting man in it, we decided to take that man and turn him into an alternate logo element. So it's still something part of our logo. We didn't create something just absolutely off the wall. It's still an element of our logo. It's just an alternate version that we can use. If you're listening to this and you're you know, on the internet, maybe you pulled up brandshouter.com because I mentioned my name. I'm name dropping a lot, my company. If you happen to pull up this site or any website, really, if your browser supports what are called favicons, which means up on the tab, it shows a little image of the site. That image should be the alternate logo for your business. So if you're on Brand Shouter specifically, you'll see our little Shouter Man icon up there on your tab. We've used the Shouter Man and other elements to bullet lists and background elements. And, you know, sometimes we'll just do a light overlay of the Shouter on the background of something just to give it a style. This alternate version of your logo will join your primary logo on your style guide. And, you know, your primary will be listed first, but this will ensure all your pieces are together so that if you send it to, you know, external graphic designer or whatever, they will know what to do. Finally, element three, and I know this is long, but hey, it's my first one. Maybe I'll trim them down with future. Element three is a typography. So while your fonts and so forth haven't always been a key element in design and they have always been a key element in design and marketing, it really wasn't around till around 2010 that it became a big thing on the web specifically and on internet marketing. And it's actually an extremely integral part of proper design, period. Now, if you were to go to a website with poor typography, you may not even realize why, but you actually start to discount the professionalism and validity of the company altogether. You know, if you go and the page has three versions of fonts and, you know, usually you also see that along with poor design. So that plays a part, but it is one element in losing respect. And so if you're thinking of your business, you gotta think along those lines. You don't want to lose other people's views and respect on what you're doing. Oh, and before I forget to say it, your logo design, if it has lettering, is a crucial part of your typography as well. Whether you have a custom font for the logo, or similar to the case of Brand Shouter, it uses a mainstream font. We use the Lato font, which is a Google font. It's crucial that the logo is visually compatible with the text on your site. With that said, you should have your logo open on your screen as you start your font hunt. There are many great resources online, but I found a fun guide from Canva.com. That's Canva.com. And it's exceptionally fun and useful. It's not just a tutorial. It does help you understand the font selection a bit, but it just shows some really awesome font combinations. Ones that I wouldn't use because I'm that way. When I see them, it's like, well, somebody else is using them. I'm going to go a different route. But they're great for inspiration. And they're all freely available fonts that they match up, which is also pretty slick. And it gives you a way to kind of get your brain on the right track. I'll include in the description of this podcast, I'll include a link to the post, the corresponding post on brandshouter.com. And in that post, there's a link to the Canva page and you can check out what I'm talking about. But it's a great resource. I'll pull it up oftentimes, when, you know, doing font research and trying to compare the look of fonts visually compared to other fonts to make sure that they have this, great aesthetic together. It's kind of a fun little starter guide for that. Now, circling back to the logo for a moment, There is a debate on whether you should include the logo font in the typography selection for the rest of your branding, or the other side of the debate is, you know, your logo should have a very distinct font. I actually just worked with a client the last couple months here, and we're working on branding, and they have another graphic designer that's working with me, and he is dead set that the font and the logo should be its own font. And that's cool. I don't hold that same opinion, but there's nothing wrong with that either. It's all in how the fonts work together. And so you want your logo font, whether it matches fonts you use throughout the site or it doesn't, you want it to look good alongside them. That's basically it. Your fonts need to look good together. So for Brand Shatter, yeah, we use literally one font throughout the entire site in various weights. And then we have a second font that's used as an accent, which you'll see like the Creatively and Creatively Smart, which is our slogan, uses that accent font. Otherwise, we stick to the logo font is the same as the text font, is the same as the heading fonts throughout our site with that one exception. And then we use different weights to make them look different and set them apart. So for each business, there's a different need and each person has a different desire for the look of what they create. As I mentioned before, I'm a minimalist and I tend to err on the side of minimalism and clean layout, which is obvious from looking at my site. But everybody's different. Everybody has a different appeal and a different approach. So it's just important that you have consistency more than whether it should be minimal or busy. I do think you can get too busy, but you know, you could argue you can get too minimal too. It's important that there is consistency and things make sense to the customer when they land. That kind of is left unsaid. And this is true of print. This is true. I often reference websites because I live on the digital realm of marketing, but it's true of all print marketing and everything else. You want to have that same cohesion through everything. So to wrap this up, I know I've been long. There are only these three are only three of the many elements of branding. But if you focus on these three elements and force your marketing to adhere to them, you'll be amazed at how much it upgrades everything you do. Your clients will always know when that email, flyer, or web page is one of yours, and it will eventually start to show in repeat business as you earn their trust. I'm going to name drop one more time. Just look at brandshatter.com if you get a chance, brandshoutere.com. And the reason I'm referencing myself isn't to be self whatever. It's because the guide here, I've applied it to my own branding, so I think it's a great example of what I'm trying to convey. And if you look at Brand Shatter, the style may or may not be your taste, and I can totally get why everybody has different tastes and so forth. But you can't deny that Brand Shatter has a really uniform approach to each and every page on our site. If you're on our mailing list, you'll see that same with the email layout. This podcast is going to be set up using the same style guides, maybe a different accent color, but the same basic principles. And if you ever go to any of our other projects, you'll see they all adhere to this similar look and feel, so you know that you are within the Brand Shatter ecosystem. And to me, that's an important piece of my business, and it should be the important piece of your business as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll be sending you more here soon.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting service. For more information on Brand Shatter and our services, visit us at brandshatter.com.